This podcast is brought to you by Merck Schering Plough Pharmaceuticals, maker of Vytorin. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit Vytorin.com. This is Discovery News. I'm Will Johnson, and time once again for the Friday News Feedbag. I'm here with Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. Guys.
Hello, Will.
Hey, Will. Will, you sound a little more serious than normal today.
I'm feeling a little serious.
Yeah.
Should I punch it up a little bit?
No. Let's get down to business.
Okay. All right. Here's how it works. Every Friday, James and Jorge bring us their three favorite stories of the week. They each have three stories, just to be clear. We then leave it up to you, our loyal listeners, to call us or email us with the story you like the most. And you can choose a story for whatever reason you want to. Just tell us why. And coming up, we'll have all new stories for you. But first, we want to tell you about the results from last week's feedback. Hope you got a chance to listen to the podcast. We got a lot of emails and phone calls from our listeners. Thanks to everybody for voting on your favorite story. And we'll tell you the results. First of all, here's a few of our favorite callers. You may remember that I believe James said if anyone sang their vote, then we would include it in the feedback. So, of course, we got a few singers.
Wow, sweet.
My vote this morning comes in the form of a song. The itsy bitsy spider climbed up the water spout. Down came the rain and washed the spider out. Out came the spidey suit and dried up all the rain. So the itsy bitsy spider climbed up the spout again.
I like poor Hay's spidey suit. 'Cause I think that is pretty sweet.
So there it is, guys. What do you think?
Speechless.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, and whatever you think of the quality of the singing or the song itself, we had to put it on because James promised.
I know, I did say that.
So
cool. Well, thank you for
putting yourself on the line.
Yeah, I mean he's yeah.
All right, well, guys, as you might have been able to tell from those two songs, Jorge's Spider-Man suit won. So, again, that was a story about how scientists are basically coming up with a suit that we'll be able to wear that'll let us sort of crawl around on walls and ceilings like Spider-Man. So, it goes to Jorge. That means Jorge is now winning 10-9 in the feedback competition.
And you know what? I'm perfectly fine with that because I actually voted for Jorge's story.
You did?
Yeah.
Is that you singing?
No. But I did think that that was a pretty good story. I didn't actually vote, but in my head I did.
I'm also fine with that because James had won like 8 in a row,
yeah.
I think. So
he needed to be stopped.
Yeah. It keeps me down a notch.
All right, well, enough.
I'm getting nervous.
Enough of that. Let's move on to this week's stories, and we will jump right into it. Again, Jorge will bring us three stories, James will bring us three, and then we'll put it to our listeners to email us or call us with their results, their votes, and then we'll tell you next week who won. So let's jump into it. Jorge, go ahead.
Okay, my first story is out of the journal called The Lancet, and researchers have found that artificial food color and additives that we commonly put in our food, but in particular children's food, exacerbate hyperactive behaviors in kids that are at least up to middle school age. And what they found is that this affects not even just kids that have, you know, been diagnosed with extreme hyperactivity or ADHD, but just kind of overall all different levels of hyperactivity. And they tested, you know, they tested 150 3-year-old kids and 140 8-to-9-year-old kids, and they gave them two different kinds of drinks. One drink contained sodium benzoate, which is a important preservative function, I guess, for food, and that also contained some other additives and food colorings. And then they gave them a drink that didn't have any of this, a placebo drink, and they found that the kids who drank the stuff with the food additives and the colorings exhibited traits of hyperactivity more so than the other kids. So I guess it's really just a matter of looking at what we're putting in our food. I mean, we should be doing this anyway, I guess.
Did you say they did a study on 153-year-old kids?
153-year-old kids.
Do you know what's unfair about that whole thing? Mm-hmm. Is that they give the hyperactivity stuff to the people who need it the least. You know what I mean? Kids are spazzes anyway. Why not? They should put that, like, Philip Brand flakes with that stuff.
I think the crux of the study is just that, you know, we're putting too much stuff in this food that maybe we don't need to
the
be
crux of
in.
The story is parents, listen up, you know.
Get
real here.
Yeah.
All right. James, your first story.
Okay, my first story is from our friends at the American Chemical Society.
Round of applause.
Yes.
They're at a meeting right now.
Is that like an inside joke already? We have like an inside joke.
Yeah, if you're a new listener, you will not understand.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of gross, actually. You know, when you're after you take an airplane ride, you usually feel kind of gross afterwards. Well, there may be something really to that. You're not crazy. They have found that there is a reaction between the oils on your skin, hair, and clothing with the ozone in the cabins that creates a chemical byproduct that like leads to headaches and dry eyes and lips and nasal irritation, the sorts of things that are associated with sick building syndrome. And the way they did this study, which I thought was kind of funny, is they got American and Danish researchers got two groups of 16 volunteers to sit in a mock airplane cabin and then expose them to varying levels of ozone and airflow. And the simulated flights were 4 hours long. So it's like riding on a normal airplane for 4 hours is kind of a bummer, right? And these guys, they didn't even get to go anywhere.
You'd have to pay me a lot of money.
Yeah. But anyway, so they found this out, and you can counteract it by putting ozone destroying like a filter in your ventilation systems, I guess, that'll remove most of the ozone from the incoming air. And they haven't made a definitive link yet, but they're saying that they think that this link is there. Wide body airplanes do have this thing in their ventilation system to take out the ozone, but on smaller aircrafts, it's generally not there. And they say that on those smaller aircrafts, the ozone inside the cabin can exceed ozone levels in Washington, D.C. on a smoggy day. And if you've ever been in D.C. on a smoggy day, it's brutal. It's disgusting.
Yeah. You know, another way to combat this is to wear one of those old-fashioned diver suits.
Right. Exactly.
You can get some on eBay. But so not only do we have to deal with terrible lines, poor customer service, delays, whatever else, but go flying.
Yep.
Ugh. Well, I feel like this is a step in the right direction. At least we know why we don't feel so great, or at least a supposed reason why we don't feel so great.
No, it's not psychosomatic, or it might not be, I guess.
Can they do a study on another thing that bothers me about airplanes? And here's another thing is who gets the armrest, you know? So, like, if you got someone on your right, like, you have to jockey for the armrest.
Like, there's a certain personality trait that always gets the armrest.
Yeah. What's the code of conduct there?
I don't know.
That's just another thing besides all this stuff you mentioned that bothers me about flying.
All right, let's move on. Jorge, what's your second story of the week?
Okay, my second story comes from the University of Kentucky in cooperation with Homeland Security Department. And basically, there's a researcher who's looking into finding a safer fertilizer. And fertilizer, you know, is made of ammonium nitrate. And it's fine by itself, but when you combine it with fuel oil, it becomes a pretty dangerous explosive, and that's the kind of explosive that Timothy McVeigh used in Oklahoma City. And he's looking at combining byproducts from coal combustion, which is fly ash, and to make this fertilizer less deadly. And he coats the fertilizer pellets with this fly ash, and when he packs them into metal canisters and takes them deep into the Kentucky hills, he blows them up. And what he learned is when he coats the fertilizer with fly ash, there's a far less violent reaction, a far less explosion. I mean, there's an explosion that still happens, but it's not a massive one that could really, you know, destroy a building, really. And the ash is classified as non-toxic by the EPA, and he even says that it has some beneficial effects for crops, and it's inexpensive, and it coats easily with the fertilizer pellets.
I have a question.
Bring it.
How is it that making explosions is beneficial to crops?
Well, what he's saying is that the ash itself, once it's released into the air, is beneficial.
So, like, blowing up your corn is
better. That's the part that's not beneficial, I would gather.
Were you joking, James?
I don't think he was. I don't think I was clear.
I was half joking.
That's all right.
Yeah.
All right, let's take it back to James for your second story.
Okay, this one is from the American Physical Society, and they have figured out how to make hot ice. And this is ice that will not melt up to 108 degrees, and in some cases will remain frozen beyond the boiling point of water. And what they're doing is putting it on specially treated diamond coatings. And what this would be used for is things like artificial heart valves, joint replacements, wear-resistant prosthetics, that sort of thing. And what this ice would do is it would make the medical devices
like less abrasive, and it would inhibit protein buildup. So I just thought this was a really sort of neat idea that you can keep ice around and useful up to these high temperatures is just sort of an interesting idea.
I think it's really cool, actually. And obviously, this is an important idea to be able to lubricate artificial joints and heart valves. But it seems to me like hot ice has so many other great opportunities to be used. I don't know exactly what they are, but at least, you know, fooling your friends with a cup of hot coffee that you put ice in that doesn't melt.
Well, I love how you say there's so many great uses for this, but the number one use to come up is pranking your friend.
Is that not important? All right, Jorge, let's take it back to you for your third and final story.
Okay, so my last story comes from the University of Washington, where scientists are working on using ultrasound to heal punctured lungs. What they do is they focus high-energy, high-intensity ultrasound beams at a particular spot inside a person's lungs that have been punctured. And by focusing these beams, which they describe as a process that's similar to focusing sunlight with a magnifying glass, it creates a tiny but really hot spot about the size and shape of a grain of rice.
Not a tic-tac.
Not a tic-tac.
Okay.
Although they probably could have used, it's about the same size.
Yeah, grain of rice, a little smaller.
I think a Tic Tac's a little bit bigger than a grain of rice.
I guess it depends on what kind of rice.
Yeah, long grain. All right. Anyways, so the rays...
So wait a minute, but you know they have the three different types of rice too, right? There's short, medium... No, but just white rice has three different sizes.
Right. They should be more specific when they say about the size of...
All right, let me read that part again, okay. Okay, by focusing the ultrasound beams into a... it's about the size of a shape a grain of short white rice. Does that make more sense?
Yeah, I can see it now.
If that's the case, are you making that up? All right.
And the rays heat the blood cells until they form a seal on the lung. And but what this does is really opens up a lot of possibilities for doctors in treating, you know, punctured lung. Right now, there's a couple of different options they have. One is to, you know, insert a straw into the lung and drain the blood. Another is to just pack the wound and apply pressure. If neither of these work, they actually have to go in surgically, and you know, that requires separating the ribs, making long incisions, and using something like this would actually create a really non-invasive way of treating this wound. And they're hoping that it would even, you know, could be applied to other different type of treatments. So really, like, kind of just a no scalpel, no sutures, bloodless surgery type deal.
All right. Well, sounds interesting, Jorge. Let's take it back to James for his third and final story.
All right. This is from the Society of General Microbiology. In the United Kingdom, cooked ham has a shelf life of 3 to 4 weeks, so 21 to 28 days, and they have now figured out how to give it a shelf life of 39 days. And in case anyone doesn't know this, cooked ham currently enjoys a 55% market share of the UK cooked meat market. And what they've done, the way they've extended the life of it, is by treating it with a protective culture of this lactic acid, which is the sort of thing that you find in yogurts and cheese. And what happens is this lactic acid then prevents other bacteria from growing on it. So in my mind, I sort of see it like the cooked ham is Whitney Houston, and the lactic acid is Kevin Costner. And Kevin Costner keeps any other big dudes from coming near Whitney Houston until they both get eaten.
Well, I'm glad to know. I mean, I guess then you're saying that cooked ham now gets a few more weeks on somebody's shelf in the UK or wherever.
Yeah, and the nice thing about this is I'm sure that they'll be able to use it for, you know, for other things. They say it actually makes the ham taste better, but it will cut down on waste because you don't have, you know, you're not throwing away as much. And
all this cooked ham clogging up the landfill in the UK.
Exactly.
uneaten cooked ham. Yeah, it's dreadful.
Right. Like a national crisis
but,
over there.
You know, it's kind of cool. You know, here's a way to do something, you know, natural instead of coming up with a brand new weird chemical to apply to it. It's, you're just taking what's already here and using it for a good new purpose.
All right. Well, that's it then, right?
Yep.
Okay. James, thanks for your three stories. Jorge, thanks for yours. And as always, I'm blown away by the quality of the stories you've chosen and the professionalism with which you brought them to us today.
Thank you, Will. Thank you.
Actually, and if you guys want to quickly, James, why don't you recap your three stories real quick, and Jorge, you can do the same.
Okay. My three stories are hot ice, skin oil interacting with ozone on airplanes, and longer shelf life for UK cooked ham.
Okay. So that's James and Jorge, your three stories.
My three stories were the food additives increase hyperactivity, brewing a blastless fertilizer, and a medical device using ultrasound to heal punctured lungs.
All right, so a lot of variety there, and we throw it to our listeners now to vote on their favorite Feedback story of the week. Give us your feedback. A listener came up with that. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, I like it. Cool.
Yeah. At pod_cast@discovery.com. Again, that's pod_cast@discovery.com. Or you can leave us a message, and you might hear your voice on the feedback. It's 888-890-6339, 888-890-6339. There's all the information you need, and we look forward to hearing from you. We look forward to hearing your vote and talking to James and Jorge next week. So that's it, guys. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson.